Interview with Kevin Rose from Digg.com, recorded January 2nd, 2006. This interview was done exclusively for Technorama, found at www.chuckchat.com. Your hosts for the interview are Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp. You can find out more about Technorama and other podcasts at www.chuckchat.com. Well, thank you for joining us today, Kevin. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your education and background, and what led you to where you are now?
Well, let's see. I grew up in Las Vegas. I attended a vocational high school out there for computer animation and 3D graphics at the time. It was Lightwave 3D on video toasters. I then continued on to UNLV to study computer science. And during the dot-com boom, it kind of pulled me out to San Francisco, where I was involved in doing some online marketing, ad buys, things like that, tweaking ads, creative, kind of like working with ad agencies and whatnot to help promote different various dot-coms. And eventually kind of just led me into working at Tech TV, where I spent 3.5 years hosting a national television show. I was actually started participating in a show called The Screensavers, and then appearing on different shows on the network and eventually hosting the show. And it was really kind of my passion for teaching others about computers and technology that really got me excited about working in television. I never really wanted to be just on TV, but eventually the network was sold to Comcast and changed into G4, which was more of a video game-centric network. And I left and founded Digg.com and also a production company that handles podcasts and vidcasts called Revision 3. And those are the two things that I'm focused on full-time right now.
So how did you, going back to Tech TV, how did you actually start off there? Because I remember, I've been a long-time viewer of that show, and I remember you were kind of in the background. Then there was a couple of times you looked uncomfortable on the camera at first, and then... you know, and then it kind of snowballed from there. So how did you kind of get started with that?
Yeah, that's I think you hit it right on the head. I was very uncomfortable at first. It was one of those things where a friend of mine was in charge of. There's another show on the network called Call for Help, mm-hmm. and a good friend of mine in the Bay Area when I was living here, it was in charge of all of their technical side of the production. So if it had to do with anything that had to do with the technical side of the daily life show, he would handle. And I have a background in networking and things of that nature, so they brought me on to handle the screensavers. So basically, it was my job behind the scenes that if anything needed to be done technically, so if they needed, you know, if they had a segment about Linux and they needed two boxes to talk to each other, it was my job to set that up and mm-hmm. handle everything behind the scenes. So, you know, I would handle 3 or 4 of the segments, the daily live segments, as far as getting the scan out to the control room and working with the engineers in the control room to make sure everything was actually worked on air. So that was my initial job there, and then I started sitting in this like nook area, which was kind of off camera, but they used to check in with, mm-hmm. and we would there would be daily live phone calls that they would have answered. So during the show, you know, my first and foremost job was just to make sure that everything was going smoothly. So it was my job to keep an eye on the segments as they were happening, things of that nature.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, which was a pain because live TV and computers just don't mix.
You know? No, it's kind of like animals or children.
Yeah. Especially with Windows being the primary OS that we were using on the show. Just mm-hmm. there was nightmares. But then we used to do a little check-in, like what was coming up on the show, and I started by sitting there and just, you know, telling I had two sentences that I would have to read off a prompter, and it was just one of the craziest experiences ever to have a camera pointing at you and know that you're on live TV in 40 million households was just, mm-hmm. It took months for me to kind of get over that fear of, I mean, it was just, it's when you're not a TV type personality, you know, and you're a geek behind the scenes your entire life, it's like, it's not an easy thing to become accustomed to. So eventually I kind of got over that. I found, a small little vulnerability in Windows XP that Leo, one of the hosts of the show, wanted me to come on and talk about. I went on the show and did that as a segment, and the executive producer liked the segment, was like, hey, if you come up with any other really, you know, cool ideas of things that you want to do on the show, you know, bring them in, let's pitch them as segments, and then you can come on and do them. Okay. So I started off with just little tiny segments, you know, just little 2 or 3 minute pieces of just things that I thought was interesting and cool. And then eventually it kind of snowballed, and in within a year I was hosting the show.
That's awesome. You're talking about your dark tips?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of like, one of the things that they wanted to do was they wanted to have someone cover kind of like, you know, the different types of tools and things that were out there as far as like the underground, like what hackers were using, like computer mm-hmm. security, things of that nature. And I mean, computer security really was never my first choice of things I really wanted to do, but it was an area that nobody else was covering. They needed someone to do. So it was one of those things where, you know, it was fun to do. And so I just would research and mm-hmm. and bring the content on air.
Tell the listener, what is dig.com?
So Dig is, we call it internally a social content website. It's a social content, social news website. So basically Dig is a way for the users to participate in the website, so much so that they have complete control of everything that happens on the site. It's a news website in that users will submit a story to Dig. So like if you're browsing around the web and you found a story that you think is really interesting and you'd like to tell a lot of people about. Right now, it's technology focused, so it would have to be a technology news related story or a science news related story. You would then go into Dig and submit that URL, give it your own unique title and description of the story, why you think it's cool, mm-hmm. and select a category that you would want to submit that story to. So, you know, there's categories for Apple or technology or design or science. Once you submit the category, that story goes into this queue. It's like a temporary holding place for the story where the story will live for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. The story actually continues to live on the site forever, but it will actually be presented in this queue for 24 hours. And then what users do is they go into these different areas, these different queues within the site, whether it be Linux or design or whatever, mm-hmm. and they look at the different stories that users have submitted. So it's kind of... it's one of those things where you'll go in and you'll see, you know, we have around in between 800 to 1,200 news story submissions per day. So users will go through those, and if you find something that you think is really cool and that others would like, you click a button that says Dig This Story. And then once you click that button that digs it, it adds one to the total number of users that have dug that story. So you'll see a little count of how many people have actually dug that story right next to the story. Mm-hmm. Now, what Dig does is once it hits a certain threshold, a certain number of digs, that story is then automatically promoted to the home page and to the the category page of that story. So it'll also, you know, if it's an Apple-related story, it'll instantly go up on the front page of Dig.com, but then mm-hmm. it's also placed inside of a promoted area that's Dig.com/Apple. Now, there's several things that happen. It's not... Basically, stories are dug to the homepage based on several different... There's kind of a little algorithm behind the scenes that works for promotion, but basically it looks at the total number of digs, how fast the story is being dug, the activity within that category, so that you'll see different stories getting promoted at different times of the day with different total number of digs. So there is no hard and fast number of digs that is required for a story to become promoted.
So it's like time sensitive and how much activity is going on?
Right, exactly. There's a couple other little things that we put into play there, but basically there's no hard, fast number. It's just looking at the activity and the interest surrounding that story. So if something's at 2 in the morning, you know, you may see it promoted with a lower total number of digs versus something that's happening during prime activity on the site.
Oh, okay.
It's a frequency thing. That's a good algorithm. I can understand that.
Yeah. I figured it may have to do something with time and how many digs were going on, but I didn't realize it was actually time of the day or things like that too.
Yeah, there's a couple other things like we look at the acceleration rate of the digs on the story, and a couple other little factors that go into that. But so that's how the stories are then promoted to the homepage. And but not only that, but every time that you dig a story within the site, you're also bookmarking that story within your own personal profile to share with others. That's what makes it a social type of thing. So if you go to dig.com/users/KevinRose, you'll see all the stories historically that I've dug since the site started. So you can kind of see a list of everything that I've dug, also everything that I've submitted, and everything that I've commented on. And the nice thing about that is that it not only it gives me a way to search, there's a little search in the lower left-hand corner of every user's profile. I can search and go back through the stories if there's something that I thought that was cool that I want to check out later. Or users can also visit my profile and see what I've been digging. So I have, you know, 10 or 15 of my good friends that I don't talk to every single day over Instant Messenger, but, you know, they might just want to be like, oh, I wonder what Kevin was into today. So they can go to my profile and find out what I've been into. But also the main thing that they use it for is the RSS feed. So every single activity that I do within the site, whether it be digging or submitting or commenting, has its own associated RSS feed so that you can actually subscribe to that. And then, you know, via Firefox Live bookmarks or whatever you like, you can see exactly what's happening on my profile. And then we also have another component that makes it a little more social where we have the friends aspect so that you can add... So if you have four or five different friends that use Dig, you can all add them to your personal profile. And then there's a tab on that profile called Friends. And basically what happens is it takes all of that activity that your friends are doing, whether it be submitting, commenting, or digging, and it kind of combines them into a single unified feed that you can subscribe to. So all I do is I subscribe to my friends' feed, and then I'll check that several times throughout the day just to see as a collective like what everyone has been digging or submitting. So that's also a nice little feature. But one of the things that we noticed, I think the biggest thing that we noticed about Dig and the biggest shock for us internally has been how fast relevant news or content can be dug to the homepage.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty amazing to us that if there's a story that is breaking news or that really strikes the general interest of the Dig community, we'll see it submitted to Dig and dug to the homepage within, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. So, you know, a good example is when we had the London bombings happened. There was someone that had taken some pictures with their camera phone and
the
had
Flickr
posted.
Pool?
Yeah, they posted them to their Flickr pool, and it was actually one of their Flickr posts. And they were also a member of Dig, so they submitted it to the Dig website. And within 15 or 20 minutes, the story was dug to the homepage. And it was really amazing because it was one of those things where we saw it hit our homepage and, you know, I didn't know, is this real? Is this fake? And, you know, I went to CNN and MSNBC and there was no stories on it. So I just thought, you know, this is a hoax. You know, we should take this down. It was starting to get, there was actually some reports on it. People didn't believe it was real. I was watching the story internally and I could see, you know, that people were reporting it as bad content. But then all of a sudden, it broke news everywhere else. You know, within a half hour later or 20 minutes later, you started to see posts on CNN and some of the other major news outlets. And it was really quite shocking to us that we could see that, you know, through the power of using the collective wisdom of the masses, we were able to, you know, Dig as a community is able to break news stories faster than pretty much anyone else.
You scoop the big guys.
which is pretty crazy, it's a lot of fun to see that happen. And we constantly see that happen, you know, almost every week now. We'll get one story or another that will just break. You'll see it on Dig before you see it anywhere else. But I think that has a lot to do with some of the tools that we're building to really give users the ability to see what's happening on the site in real time. One of the most popular features on the site is called Dig Spy.
Right.
So if you go to dig.com/spy, it gives you a real-time view of what people are doing on the site. So using some technologies like Ajax, you can sit back and just kind of watch what people are digging. It's a little animation effect comes up, and you can see what people are digging, what people are burying, which is when they're saying they're not into it, what people are commenting on. And you can also change the view, whether it's just homepage stories that have already been promoted or just the queue itself, which is up-and-coming stories.
Well, so, and I have to say that new version of the Dig Spy looks really nice, too.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's something that we've put a lot of work into. We really wanted to take... and we'll continue to build this out, but it's one of those things where we want to give users the ability to watch in real time what's happening, no matter what it is. You know, if it's just someone that happens to be leaving comments in the only the DigQ area, you know, if you want to drill down to just that specific thing, you can just watch that activity and what's happening.
This is Steve Wozniak. You're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
It's the, you mentioned the power of the masses in the way that they get promoted to the front page. Is that a similar algorithm when things get marked lame as how many times it's been marked lame in a certain period, the frequency?
It is a similar algorithm. There's actually, it's kind of a sliding scale. So basically, if something is buried by a certain number of users, it takes a look at the total digs in the story and then comes up with a scale on how many buries by users would be required to actually remove the story from the homepage.
Oh, like a ratio.
Right, and that's one of the things that, you know, it can be very frustrating to some users on the site because they'll submit some content that may not be tech-related or that, but it still could be a good story, but it just doesn't really fit in with what the masses at Dig believe to be important content. And right now, the way that it works is that if a user is reported a certain number of times or buried a certain number of times, the story just disappears from the homepage, and the users of that actually submitted the story or dug the story really have no idea of what happened to that story or why it was reported or removed. So one of the things that we're adding here in the near future that we're working on is the ability to allow everyone on the site to see what's happening to the stories and that they've been removed. So we're creating a little bin that's going to be kind of like the buried story bin that users will be able to go into, see why the story was removed, and also vote to have the story reinstated. So if they believe it was falsely removed, they can also say, hey, actually, this was a good story, and here's why, and cast their vote. And if enough people believe that story should be reinstated, it will be put back into the main dig queue.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be handy, because that's happened to us a couple of times. We're like, hey, what happened?
Oh. Yeah.
I went looking. I'd dug something, but I came back, and I was going to send one of my friends a link, and I just searched for it real quick, and I never saw it. And I was like, well, I know it was here, but I looked under my Dig profile, and sure enough, there it was. But I was like, why is it not coming up in the search?
Right. See, that's odd. That's one of the problems that's another thing that we'll be fixing very, very soon, hopefully within the next week or so, is we're going to allow users to search buried stories as well. So there'll be a little checkbox and say you can search a buried story. And we also want to do exact URL matching on searches. So if you type in a URL, it'll be able to show the stories that are associated with that URL as well. So that's something that's easy to do, and hopefully we have a couple other features that a couple of little things that we need to get done first, but that'll be coming very soon.
What is Dig written in?
It's all LAMP, so it's all Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP.
Oh, that's awesome. So I guess Dig is probably a good example of when somebody says, hey, does PHP scale well?
Yeah, well, the PHP is really, I mean, that used to be, Yahoo is a great example of PHP scaling well. I mean, it's like most of their site is all PHP. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's where all the good PHP developers are that we're trying to hire. So,
but hey, I'm over here, man. I'm over here.
Yeah, it's hard to pull them out of Google or Yahoo, man. They take care of their employees.
Oh, sure.
But we haven't really had any problems with PHP. There's been no limitations that we've run into. You know, we've had some database scaling little issues initially, but that's all kind of smoothed out now, and. So yeah, PHP has been great for us, and the whole open source thing has saved us a lot of money. And it's just I would never touch Windows for this type of stuff. You know, it's like we're everyone here internally, from you know our Unix admin to our developers and myself, we're all big proponents of all things open source, and we love you know the fact that we can use Apache and Linux and MySQL has just been it's been great for us.
How many servers are currently being used to host dig.com?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not exactly even sure anymore. I haven't been down to the racks in probably a few months, but...
The racks, you talk like it's a dungeon.
Yeah, it's crazy. We have a couple 19-inch racks now. I'm not sure exactly how many are being used right now. I'm guessing probably somewhere around 25 or so.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I'd have to talk to Ron, who has all the admin side of things.
Now, when you go into the Wayback Machine and you went from that initial grassroots project, and I think you mentioned the Paris Hilton incident where you went, oh my gosh, we've got to grow this thing. You had to step back and scale it to multiple machines. How much of an effort was that to take your code from a single database and a single web server and scale it to multiple machines?
It was a huge effort. It was one of those things where when we first started designing Dig, it was one of those things where it was with just myself and a friend of mine that we sat down and said, hey, this would be a fun little project. And, you know, I really never had any idea that it was going to be this big of site. So it was one of those things where we, you know, I spoke with Owen. I was like, hey, Owen, here's what I'm thinking. You know, I put together a little paper for him describing exactly how I wanted the system to work. He took a look at it and said, hey, that's going to take me about a week, week and a half. We'll be done with it, and that'll be it. And so it was one of those things where I gave him the kind of the spec for it. He made the code happen. We put the design together, launched it, and then, you know, 2 weeks went by, and I said, you know, Owen, it'd be really cool if we had this feature. Why don't we add this? And so he would add it, code it, put it in the system, done. And that kept going. I mean, we never stopped. It just kept going like that. We were just building and building and building. And then all of a sudden, we, you know, about three months into it, we started thinking, well, this, it's scaling. It was scaling okay. We thought, well, we're still in one box. We still have, you know, Apache and MySQL all on a single server, so we're fine, no big deal. You know, worst case, we'll have to add a second box. It'll be our database, you know. So then eventually we're like, okay, now's the time to add a second box. It's the database. So we never really thought about scaling. It was one of those things where two servers were like, okay, now we should be good for another 6 months. But it was one of the, and then once we added the second server, all of a sudden, it just overnight, we were hitting the wall like every week. It was just a crawl, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden we realized that we had known that it would be had been this successful, we would have made different decisions in the design process from the beginning, and we'd learned the lesson the hard way, and that was poor performance for a while. You know, poorly written queries. Not Owen's fault, but just the fact that we really didn't think we were going to ever need to scale it like we did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then you start thinking about, then we start, you kind of just stop and say, okay, hey, we're hitting the wall every week. We need to really dive into the system and find out what's wrong, what's causing the problems, where are the slow queries coming from, you know, what kind of complex joins are we doing in MySQL that we can avoid, you know, what types of elements can we cache? Are we going to, you know, we need to add extra slave servers. So we need to add a bunch of slaves. We need to kind of load balance these queries a little bit better. We need to talk about load balancing Apache. You know, what kind of boxes can we put in front of Apache to load balance? Is there a NetScaler? Mm-hmm. You know, we looked at several different options, and we sat down with a few people that have kind of helped scale out some of these sites in the past. Our DBA now that works full-time on Dig is an ex-Friendster guy that helped scale them out. Mm-hmm. And he really brought a lot of really interesting things to the table and suggestions and ideas. And, you know, it's helped us out, and we finally got, most of the bugs fixed, and everything is scaling nicely now. And we've restructured the code so that it's a lot easier to scale. And that took a while, but it's one of those things that had we planned that from the beginning, it would have been a lot easier.
Do you find you have to formalize a lot of your processes and things? I mean, in the early days, it was, hey, you know, it'd be nice if, and you go click, 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 and it's up online.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the way that we design and launch new features has completely changed. I mean, just because from a design standpoint, you know, little things that you would never think of can make all the difference in the world. I mean, if you're making a change to the homepage where you give a little more prominence to something, like we moved the Dig Spy icon down from the lower right-hand corner up into the foreground now in the upper right-hand corner. Well, mm-hmm. just the fact of doing that, that little tiny change, it's a small design change, you don't think that, you know, if you make the font size a couple points bigger, you know, just by doing that tiny little change, you're going to drive an extra 75,000 users to use that feature every single day. And it's because of little things like that that just really throw you for a loop, you know. So you have to think everything through. You know, everything that we're doing now is no longer like, I'll make a change to the code and then just push it live. You know, we use Subversion now, which is a, you know, CVS type system for checking code in and out because we have multiple developers working on the code. You know, we have our own little internal things that we design, our own little wiki that we design different projects on, talk about new features. You know, there's a schedule for rolling out things. We talk about what type of, you know, we have internal testing boxes where we do some load testing to see if a new feature is going to be causing any types of slowness on the site. So there's just, you know, several different staging boxes where we have different levels of code running on different boxes. And, you know, a complete QA-type check system where we have myself and a couple other folks just diving into the code, trying to make things break, and it's just...
Beat on it.
Beat on it. It's a completely different process than it used to be.
Hello, this is Dr. Floyd.
And this is Dr. Grant from the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd.
And you're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama.
Ooh, Technorama. That sounds fancy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear that's with Chuck and Craig.
Who?
Craig.
Craig Stepp?
Yes, Craig Stepp. You know him, right?
Oh, sure. Who doesn't know him?
How many people are on there full-time now?
There's right around 10 of us now.
Oh, yeah?
Working on Dig full-time. And we're still looking for more developers, so if you're a PHP guru, we would love to have your resume.
You have to be in the San Francisco area?
Yeah, Bay Area.
All right.
Are there specialists that focus on new features and others that maintain the existing infrastructure, or is everybody a generalist and help out where necessary?
We have a guy that's dedicated to doing nothing but the administration of the site from a Unix standpoint. Ron, he's the guy that installs all the new servers, make sure, you know, that all the versions of the software running on the machines, whether it be Apache or MySQL, or, you know, he makes sure everything is in sync from that standpoint. And then we have a DBA that obviously handles the health of the database, you know, puts together our disaster recovery plans if should, you know, something fail, does all the backups, looks for slow queries, writes scripts that, you know, give us information on what's happening in the servers in real time. And then we have the developer side of things with Owen and the others that basically focus on fixing bugs and new features.
I know you made an announcement not too long ago about, you know, you got some VC money. Where's that kind of going, or what are you doing with it? You got the big Dig private jet now with the...
No. No, it's nothing like that at all. Basically, the story behind that is what happened is that we hit a certain growth rate. I mean, Google AdSense is great and all, but there's no way AdSense can cover the costs of at least right now, of maintaining a site the stage of growth that we're in right now, maintaining that and keeping that going long term. I mean, when you're having to buy, you know, an extra 5 servers a week, or it gets crazy. So we knew that because of how fast we were growing and the people that we wanted to bring on board to kind of support the growth, to roll out new features and to maintain the existing code, we knew that we were going to have to go after some type of money to kind of get us off the ground to kind of fuel that. And we were lucky enough to Mark Andreessen, one of the founders of Netscape, and Pierre Omidyar, one of the founders of eBay, you know, these guys came to the table, and Greylock Ventures, they came to the table and said, hey, you know, we'll all chip in and we'll raise, you know, get you the money that you need to hire a team of people that'll ensure that Dig is able to grow and roll out new features. And that sounded great to us. And it was one of those things that we didn't give away, you know, the entire company, or we didn't lose control of the company, or, you know, so there's no fears or worries about that. It was just one of those things where we went after and raised some money so that we can just support our growth.
That's cool.
And so the money is just primarily for hiring new people, so that we can and purchasing servers is really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
What are the demographics of Dig.com?
You know, it's all over the place. It's one of those things where we don't really ask any information such as age or location or things of that nature. I mean, you could put in your location in your own personal profile, but it's pretty much it's really kind of interesting how we've seen everything from, you know, 18 to 34 types, and then hardcore developers participating in the programming section, to people just posting crazy links in the link category. So I think it kind of just really, it really depends on the type of content. I think that you have different people submitting different types of stories to Dig, and they're coming there for different reasons. You know, we can look internally at what people are subscribing to, as far as the number of people that are reading the different types of feeds on the site. And, you know, you see there's different groups of users that are interested in certain sections of the sites, where others are, you know, there may be a certain portion of the viewers that just are into the gaming section and the link section, and then you have a whole different type segment of viewers that are into science and programming. So it's really kind of a mishmash of all different types of users and all different ages.
So where's Dig going in the future? Like, you know, brand new year, what's coming up for Dig?
This year is going to be, it's one of those things where the way that you see Dig today, by this time next year, it's going to look nothing like it does today. we have, I mean, internally, I have about, in my own head, Dig is about, I don't know, 5 to 10% complete of really where I want to see it be. Okay. I have a list of, you know, 20 or 30 features that will just, hopefully will blow your mind, just because it's stuff that no one's ever done on the web before. It's some really unique ways of viewing our data, and also different categories and different things that you'll be able to dig in the future. We're moving out of technology news into other areas. You know, we want to be able to cover pretty much anything that people want to express interest in. So whether it be, you know, world news or politics or, you know, whatever it may be that you're into, we want to have a section that will accommodate that. And we want to, there's a lot of features that I've kind of put together that will enable you to connect with people with similar interests. I mean, the whole idea behind Dig right now is it's a great way to find out cool new stories, but we want to build out some of these social tools, and that you'll be able to find others that you can connect up with that and discuss stories with, and that have interests just like you do. And we want to make Dig a little bit smarter too. I mean, Dig knows what types of stories that you're digging, so it would be great if Dig could recommend stories based on your past digging preferences. You know, if you're into,
and what others are digging also the same article and what they're digging to.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Are there tips that one can use for getting better recognition or placement?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I could, from, you know, I watch the site every day, so I could tell you what I've seen on the site. As far as, are you talking about as far as a user submitting content and things of that
nature?
Yeah,
if I were to post a story, obviously if I said, hey, I had an interview with Kevin Rose, that's going to get some pretty good recognition. But I don't interview you every day.
One of the things that, you know, I have to say that obviously gets the most attention is just good quality links and quality. It's the way of describing the link. If you give it a really good title and a really good description that's thought out, and you can get a lot more digs than you would should you just say, you know, the title says it all. Sometimes I'll see stories that will personal post a great title for the story, but they won't give it any description, and it doesn't get as many digs. You know, it's funny. I'll see two identical stories submitted from two different sources. So let's just say you have a story about Intel's just rolled out some new logo design for their microprocessors. And someone will submit a story from eWeek, and someone will submit a story from news.com. And one story will be submitted 2 hours earlier, but just have a poorly written description field. You know, might have an okay title, but a poor description. And the same story from eWeek that was submitted a couple hours later will get dug to the homepage faster, just because it has a better title and description.
So, a better link, too. I know some people complain because it goes to a blog that links to whatever they're talking about.
Right, exactly. One of the quickest ways to get your story removed from Dig by the masses is post it on your own personal blog. Now, the thing is, at Dig, there's no problem with people posting their blogs. I mean, that's great. And a lot of the times we'll see bloggers that submit a great story that actually have something, you know, a great take on that story or something important to say about that topic. But where you get into trouble is that you'll see a lot of people that will try and submit stories to their blog that are just simply repurposing other people's information. So we call it kind of the man in the middle type thing, where they'll find a post on another website that's just a great post. They'll copy, you know, the first paragraph of it, put it in quotes, submit it on their own blog, maybe add a sentence or two of their own little personal description on it, and then the Dig users can see right through that, though. You know, they'll see, they'll click through the story and they'll see that it really wasn't there was no value add in what that blogger was talking about, and they'll quickly bury the story and have it removed from the site. So that's another thing, is just make sure that, you know, if you're posting your own personal blog, that you have you know, your own unique take on the story, and you're actually adding some value to that story rather than just trying to you know, steal someone else's content.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Well, what is Revision 3 up to these days?
So Revision 3 is a completely separate company. It's basically a company that I participate in, that we do podcasts and vidcasts and things of that nature. And it's Revision 3 right now is producing a few different shows that we have in the works. They do Dig Nation, which is the weekly podcast that we do about the top stories on Dig. So I participate in that with the co-host Alex Albrecht, who was we actually used to host the Screensavers together for a brief stint down in L.A. when they first moved the show down to Los Angeles. And that's a weekly show that we do about the top stories on Dig, where we just kind of kick back and it's very relaxed. You know, we have a beer and we talk about whatever stories we thought were the coolest of that week that happened to appear on the top stories list of Dig. And we also do another little show called System, which is basically it's like a technology how-to show. So each episode will tackle a different topic and really go in depth and spend, you know, 20, 30 minutes and explain the basics of that topic and how to get started. So the last one that we just launched a couple weeks ago was Asterisk, which is an open source VoIP, Linux-based VoIP distro that you can kind of run your own Vonage out of your house, which is really cool. And we got John Todd, who is one of the experts on Asterisk, and we did a great little how-to on that and launched that. And then we have other shows that Martin Sargent, one of the old Tech TVers, is doing a podcast with us called Unscrewed, which is kind of like the shady underground side of the internet. which is his own little personal take on things.
Yeah, I got the first podcast. I haven't seen any more.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore. It's definitely an 18-plus podcast. And then we have some really cool ones that are coming in the near future. We have Alex is doing a show called Outsourced, which is going to be kind of a fun little... It's going to be one of the first... kind of online vid sitcoms out there, and he's got some really good talent that are actually going to work on that. It's like a...
Oh, that's cool.
Alex is also an actor, and he's got some actor friends, and they're going to put together a fun little sitcom that's called Outsourced, about technology and the life and of someone that works in an outsourcing firm. And then kind of think kind of like, what's a good example? The Office. Is a good example, but applied to computers and technology. Yeah. And then he's also doing another show called Control Alt Chicken that will be out. I'm not sure.
Hey, I like that.
I'm not sure exactly when that's going to be out, but sometime in the next 6 months or so. And it's basically going to be a cooking show. So it's a geek cooking show. So he's going to have different various guests on that are going to be...
You take your ramen noodles and throw them in the microwave.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to... we're going to try and get some pretty famous tech celebrity guests to come on and share their you know, most prized recipes with the world. So that'll be kind of cool. And then we have another show that'll be coming out here in February that's going to be, I'm not sure if you guys are remember Burt Monroy. He's the Photoshop expert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's great, yes.
Yeah, he was just amazing, and he's going to be doing a show with us all about Photoshop tips and tweaks. So you'll see that out sometime next month. It's going to be a great show about basically how to do really, really cool things in Photoshop. I mean, he just really knows.
Yep. Oh, I've seen him on the Screensavers, and I've seen his books in the store. Oh, it's just some you look at it and you can, some of those you can hardly tell if they're real or not.
Oh, I know. It's just amazing stuff. And he's such a nice guy, and he's just great talent. He just does a really good job, and so I can't wait to see that one come out. Awesome. But
I have to tell you, I really like the Asterisk system. I watched it the other day. You know, I knew what Asterisk was. I've read about it, and I thought about using it at home. And it's I think in my Linux Journal this last month there was a big write up about it. But it's always something to sit there and go, see him, you know, see y'all screwing around with it and doing working on it, and it's like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, it's being a little visual. You know, feedback helps. So, what other cool things do you have coming up for a system and the broken? Is the broken coming back?
Yeah, the broken, it's one of those things where the broken's, it's a lot harder to put together. It's hard because we've had a couple of really good episodes of the broken, and we want to make sure that we just live up to what we've done in the past. And so we're taking our time and really putting together a new intro for it. And we're putting together some fun things that we can do, some fun projects that we can do on the broken. It's coming. It's just one of those things that's kind of slow with everything else that's going on. We're trying to find, you know, time for Dan to work on it, time for myself to work on it. We have all these other things that Keith's editing. So we've almost completed the intro for it, but we have a long ways to go of actually getting it done. But you'll definitely see that within the next sometime in the first half of this year, you'll see a new episode of The Broken. And system is one of those things where we just we have to really sit down and think about what would make a good episode. And we have some really good suggestions. But if you want to, if there's any one particular topic that you want covered on system, we're open to people actually submitting us suggestions and going to our forums on revision3.com. We have forums there for system suggestions, and we actually look through there quite a bit. That's how we found the Asterisk one. But if you want to submit anything that you'd like to see, but yeah, you're absolutely right. What we're looking for is like some type of content that users just it's kind of like Asterisk is one of those things where you see it on online. And it's extremely difficult to kind of wrap your head around, you know?
Exactly.
It's one of those things where if you present it in a visual medium and you actually show it working and you show us digging into the configuration files and making tweaks and actually, you know, compiling and getting it up and running, it's one of those things where it was much like Myth TV in that you watch the episode first and then decide for yourself either, well, that was cool, but I wouldn't want to do it myself, or that's cool and I'm going to give it a try, you know?
Right.
It's one of it's a pretty big commitment to sit down and figure out exactly how all this stuff works. And we really want to stick to that, where we want to bring different segments to users that they may not know about, or that just may seem overwhelming to the average user, but it's something that we can tackle and kind of show you and break it down for you in an easy to understand format. So if there's anything out there that, you know, you'd really like to see us do, you know, we were toying around with creating an episode about how to make your own custom Linux distribution. And we've had a couple other suggestions. But yeah, please go into that section there and submit your suggestions, and we'll go through them and pick the best ones and tackle them.
See, in that same vein as seeing I need to see things done, I'm looking forward to some more hacking with Ramsey.
Yeah, Ramsey is back. We just got done shooting a little piece of the intro. Ramsey's going to be in the new intro. And we just got done shooting that here about a week and a half ago. So we're working on it, but it's bits and pieces, you know. We kind of spread it out. But you'll see a new episode this year for sure.
Oh, yeah. Ramsey was fun. That's where the first time I saw him. And he was like, here's my hacker tip. And I was like, okay, I'm down with this. And I was watching it, and I was taking him serious for a moment. And he's like, go on to Kazaa or whatever it was and download this, and there you go. I was like, what?
Well, that's Ramsey. It's like he knows nothing about – he really doesn't know much about computers at all. Yeah. But, you know, he understands, like, the whole comedy side of things, and he just really wants to, you know – he just loves participating. He's so much fun. I love.
Was he like your neighbor or something? Or
yeah, he was my neighbor. Yeah, he was my neighbor back when I used to live in the Mission area of San Francisco. But yeah, he's just a good friend now. But yeah, Ramsey loves doing that stuff.
That's funny.
That's pretty cool.
All right, you ready for the pop quiz?
Yeah. What's this all about? What's
okay? If the following people were electronic devices or gadgets, what would they be and why?
Oh boy!
First person, Leo Laporte.
I think Leo would probably be a TiVo, just because he absorbs everything and anything that's put in front of him, and he's just he's always able to recall anything in a moment's notice. I've never seen anybody that can just pull random facts out of nowhere. You know, it's like I don't know where he stores all this stuff, but he just knows so much about everything. It's just crazy. But yeah, Leo's definitely the Tebow of the bunch.
A huge Tebow.
Let's go with his yes. former ex-partner.
Modified Tebow.
Yeah, hacked. His former Tech TV partner, Patrick Norton, what would he be and why?
Patrick's a hard one to put your finger on because he's so different than everyone else. He's a geek, but he's also so much more. Patrick is just like, many people don't know this about him, but he's just like, he's the biggest car, like gearhead that you've ever met in your entire life. Mm-hmm. So I would almost think that he would be some type of device that's associated with vehicles and cars more so than computers. I'd almost put Patrick down as some type of GPS unit because you never know where he's at any given weekend. Like he's always in the middle of desert, out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, he's definitely GPS because we could never track down where Patrick's at. He's always off racing vehicles somewhere or doing something crazy.
Patrick, the OnStar Norton.
That's right.
I was going to say, during our interview, apparently his wife can find him pretty easy.
Yes. She cracks the whip. Yes, that's true.
All right, next one. This should be a little easier. Steve Jobs.
I really don't know Steve personally, so...
I'd take a wild guess. What would he be if he were some electronic gadget?
That's a good question. What would I put Steve down as? Because he's so many different things to different people, you know? What did you guys have him down as?
We don't have the answers. We just make
come on.
Questions.
You didn't take the test yourself?
Maybe we should give it to each other. I don't know. I haven't tried.
What did Patrick list him as? You got to tell me that much. I need to know that one.
Did we ask Patrick about Steve? We changed the list every time.
I think so.
Oh, nice. Give me all the hard ones.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you an easy one then. Dan Heward.
Oh, Dan Heward. Oh, boy. He's going to kill me if I say something bad.
So say something bad.
Well, it would probably have to be the most expensive piece of computer technology that you could imagine because I would say probably like something ridiculous like a 30-inch flat screen Apple Cinema display just because wow. he's constantly buying the most expensive technology he can put his hands on even though I don't know how he can afford it, but he's one of those guys that he just like, he walks into the store and if he like sees something that he just really, really likes, he has to have it and he buys it at ridiculous. And then the price, the thing with the joke, the running joke with Dan is that every time that we just wait for him to buy something because we know the second he does, the price is going to drop because it just, it always happens that way.
I have that similar experience.
Here, we'll give you an easy one. What would you rate? What kind of gadget would you be?
You know, I think that I'm typically probably something a lot less techy. Probably a one of those moleskin pads and paper. Most of my ideas and stuff like that. That I my biggest tool that I work on is just drawing stuff out on traditional paper with a pen. So
your hipster PDA.
Yeah, I don't have a PDA. I just use,
no. I was saying you're one of those.
Yeah, that's my hipster PDA right there. But I'll tell you what, I could be a PowerBook too because I just got my PowerBook a few weeks ago and mm-hmm. I love it. It's amazing.
Hey, Kevin, I want to thank you. I know you're a very busy person with all the projects you've got. Really appreciate the time you spent with us today, and good luck to everything you do.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi, inviting you to stop by chuckchat.com and subscribe to Technorama to get the show downloaded for free automatically to your computer twice a week for the regular show, plus special features such as this interview as they are available. Until next time, a binary high five, 101.